Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Derek Mason, Braden Gall. And Preds win last night, of course, over the San Jose Sharks, 3-1. Huge third period. Quite a boring first two periods, I'll say. And then all hell broke loose in the final, like, 5 seconds or 30 seconds of the second period. And then, of course, the Preds came out flying, and UC Saros was brilliant last night. They are now 5-1-2 in their last eight, and they sort of have, at least for the time being, have righted the ship for now. And, of course, there's still, like, a boatload of games, like 1,000 games left to go in the season. Greg Wyshynski joining us here covering the NHL for ESPN. Always a pleasure to talk to you, Greg. And, first of all, your thoughts on the Preds season to date. We're about 30 games in. They've had a really great start to the season, a really bad middle stretch, and then have been better since in the last couple of weeks. What are your thoughts so far on what you've seen from the Nashville Predators?
Yeah, it certainly does allow you to get pretty healthy when you play the Devils and Sharks back-to-back, two teams that are really struggling this season. But no, I think you're right. I think it's taken a little bit of time to round into form. On paper, still one of the most talented teams in the Western Conference. It's just that the Western Conference has been a little topsy-turvy in the first third of the season. I think all of us are pretty confident they're going to be a playoff team. It was just a matter of trying to find their footing. And so far in the last five games, like you said, the results have been a little bit of an uptick, and that's a good thing to see.
Now, was it a big surprise from a national standpoint the way the Nashville Predators struggled in that seven-game span? Or is it just one of those deals where it's a long season and teams are going to go through struggles like that? But they went through a struggle where they were giving up, I mean, a boatload of goals.
Yeah, and I think that's the key. I mean, I think it was a surprise when you take a critical look at the Predators' numbers during that stretch and during their struggles this season and see their team save percentage down in like the 880s, which is not what you expect when you have Pekka and UC Soros back there. So from that, not only from the perspective of the Predators not being in a playoff spot, but also just the failings of what many of us assumed was going to be one of the real strengths of the team between the pipes, I think was a pretty big surprise.
Greg Wyshynski joining us here. Greg, the thing that is happening, this reckoning that is happening in the NHL. So, I guess my first question is, how surprised were you that Dallas made the move to fire Jim Montgomery yesterday, and a guy that's, you know, had a winning record and, you know, an excellent team last year, a team that's looking good this year, and it doesn't feel like it's, according to the press conference at least, it doesn't feel like it's related to this reckoning at all. But how surprised were you with the news?
It's not, the NHL, in fact, yesterday kind of confirmed that it wasn't, because Gary Bettman was asked on Monday at the Board of Governors meeting, are there any other active investigations into coaches? And he said there weren't, fully knowing that the Dallas Stars were on the verge of making this move with Jim Montgomery. So it's not related to the other issues that the league's dealing with. It was an absolute shock. I mean, not only are the Dallas Stars in a playoff spot, and not only did they do this on a game day, and not only does Jim Montgomery have a few years left on his contract, they're also a few weeks out from the Winter Classic, to the point where the NHL is going to start doing that behind-the-scenes documentary stuff with this team I think this week, which is a pretty fortuitous timing for the NHL to make pretty good television, but not the best thing in the world for the Dallas Stars. But, you know, from everything I've heard behind the scenes, and again, there's a lot of scuttlebutt and rumor and innuendo about what's gone on there with Montgomery off the ice. It sounds like it's a justifiable firing for what they're calling sort of a material breach, and it was a shock. But you know, the details will come out when they come out, and I think when they do, they'll be in better focus. But yeah, I mean, it was a jarring moment, I think, for a lot of us.
I think your mind can drift pretty quickly to one area when you hear the phrase general counsel was involved. And so, again, we'll keep an eye on it. However, Greg Wyshynski joining us here. You also had a long piece recently as it pertains to all of this stuff that's going on in the NHL. Bill Peters in Calgary. Don Cherry, of course, I would lump into this category, maybe loosely. Obviously a different sort of a situation there. Mike Babcock at Toronto. Mark Crawford. It's just been on and on. And I guess my question is, and we had a long debate today on the show, at the beginning of the show, just about sort of how we are evolving as a society, but we can't also re-legislate everything and change cultural norms that were 15 or 20 years ago. sort of, so in your mind, explain what you are seeing and how it's unfolding in the NHL right now, and sort of what is the driving force behind all of this?
Well, I mean, so there's a few different levels of coaching abuse, right? Like the Bill Peters stuff was pretty easy when you have a player accusing him of racial slurs and getting those accusations corroborated by ex-teammates. It's pretty easy now, I think, in 2019 to say, hey, if you're an NHL coach, you shouldn't kick your players or punch your players or choke your players for dramatic effect. I think we can all agree that that's probably not something we want in the workplace. And then it gets into that real gray area. And, you know, Toronto Maple Leafs president Brendan Shanahan spoke about this yesterday in discussing the accusations against Mike Babcock. For those who don't know, Babcock was accused of having Mitch Marner as a rookie create a list of all of his teammates based on how hard they play, and then shared that list with the players that he ranked at the bottom. And so that was seen as abusive, and the Maple Leafs at the time reprimanded Babcock for it. And then Johan Franzen, who used to play with the Red Wings, came out and said that Babcock mentally abused him to the point where he had a nervous breakdown on the bench. And Shanahan said, you know, it's kind of a gray area, dealing with some things that might have passed the test a decade ago that in retrospect don't. And he also said something very interesting, which is that, you know, there are things that at the time players in the NHL probably knew weren't cool, but it just wasn't the culture to come forward with it. So I don't know. It's one of the reasons why the NHL didn't come out with a framework for punishing this stuff, but more of a plan to kind of deal with it. It's because we are dealing with a lot of gray area when it comes to not only what happened in the past, but what's happening now insofar as what hockey culture allows.
Now, we know what's going on, or we're now starting to find out what's going on at the professional levels. How much worse is it at the youth level here in the States and in other countries?
Yeah, that's the real problem. I mean, you know, in Canadian junior, there's a history of coaching abuse. And I think the NHL in trying to create sort of an action plan to educate their personnel on diversity and inclusiveness and create a hotline for players and team personnel to call with tips about abuse. A lot of it is the hope that not only do they eradicate this on the pro level, but they have a trickle-down effect to other levels to ensure that the things that we kind of now see as being abusive aren't in practice at lower levels of sport. And Shanahan also mentioned, you know, the idea that, you know, with the things that the NHL does, can have a direct effect on youth hockey in particular, and I think the league's very cognizant of that.
Greg Wyshynski joining us here, and I did read your piece that obviously tied in with Peter Laviolette and the whole thing on the bench with the Flyers, and I don't know where you fall on it, because I thought you did a very fair job of portraying, you know, the yellow side of this whole thing. And to me, the player who was in the video who was getting hit in the head, I don't buy Peter Laviolette's explanation that it was accidental. I just don't believe in that. I also don't think it was a big deal. If we're not going to be outraged for the last 9 years, how can we be outraged today about it? And if the victim, and I always say this now as well, you can't be more outraged at something than the quote-unquote victim. And if the player who's involved in this doesn't really care and doesn't really, you know, it's not a good look. You can't do it today. I get that. But, like, if the guy doesn't care about it and doesn't view it as a big deal, then why should anybody else?
Right. And you know, I wasn't trying to, like, I mean, I had people saying I was on a witch hunt or something. I mean, all I was doing was reaching out to the guy at a time when coaches punching players was on the minds of every hockey fan. The guy who was involved in the single most viral clip of a coach punching a player in the last decade, just to kind of see what he thinks of all this stuff. And like you said, Ville Leino said it was a heat of the moment thing. Laviolette apologized to him, according to the player. And while he said it's not something that should necessarily happen again, he understood the context of it at the time. And, you know, the whole point of reaching out to him and the whole point of the piece is that we are dealing with a huge gray area. I mean, when we hear a coach punching a player, it could very well look like that. It could very well be that. And I think we all have to kind of take a step back and figure out the context and listen to the players involved in these incidents. And that's also part of the equation too, is, and what makes it so hard to either litigate or relitigate this stuff, which is that the actions of a coach for, against one player, well, that player might see it as great motivation, like tough love, good coaching, made me a better player, made me a better man. Another player coming from a different background might be like, that is complete abuse. And so it becomes a very sort of personal thing as far as what these coaches are doing. So it just kind of adds into that gray area. I was happy that Laviolette spoke about it because, you know, I do think that it was a heat of the moment thing and it wasn't indicative of a pattern of abuse or anything, especially with what Leano said. But it just kind of speaks to the gray areas that we're dealing with right now.
Greg Wyshynski joining us here from ESPN covering the NHL. Who are the teams that you like right now to be standing in the Western Conference Finals?
It seems to change every week. I think I've been really impressed with what St. Louis has done. I know there's sort of a little bump recently, but to be able to do what they've done in that division with Tarasenko out for the majority of the season and knowing that Doug Armstrong, their general manager, is going to continue to be super aggressive and trying to add to a championship roster. They've been very, very impressive, and I expect that they're going to, you know, continue on as the playoffs arrive. I'm not sold on the Coyotes yet. Edmonton has to show me a little bit more than, you know, two guys scoring 70% of the points. I think you still have a huge class of teams that are just trying to kind of prove themselves, like the Predators, like the Golden Knights, and others. But to me, the Blues and the Colorado Avalanche, for me, are the two classes of the conference right now.
Greg Wyshynski joining us here. Greg, I'm going to let you go on this one. My two coworkers here, my co-host Derek Mason and my producer, we call him Munson, because that's his last name, have been begging me to watch a particular movie for months now. I, over the weekend, sat down and watched my main man, Dolomite, and I saw you tweeting about it. So what are your thoughts on Eddie Murphy in Dolomite? I thought it was spectacular.
He was so good, and Wesley Snipes was so good.
Exactly.
Underrated.
I didn't even know it was Wesley Snipes at first.
Yeah, but the thing is, if you're sort of like hesitant to watch it, the dudes that wrote My Name is Dolomite also wrote Ed Wood and The People versus Larry Flint. And this movie is very much like those movies. It's about sort of like a crazy dreamer and the pack of weirdos that believe in his dream. And it's a lovely, funny movie. And there's like a lot of sort of like, hey, kids, let's put on a show vibe in the way that they made that Dolomite movie. I really, really loved it. I thought it was a very special film. And I fully expect Eddie Murphy is going to get an Oscar nomination out of it.
There you go. That's big
stuff.
It's
already nominated for a Golden Globe. So
national NHL hockey cover writer and film critic as well, Greg Wyshynski. We appreciate
it. I was a film minor at the University of Maryland. So I know what I'm talking about. I probably know more about movies than I know about dopey hockey. Okay, so
interesting.
It's gospel. Yeah,
okay.
But, also, don't forget, people really like Eddie Murphy, and they want him on their award show. So let's be honest on that one, too.
Greg, thank you. Very diverse. We appreciate it, man.
Anytime, boys. Thanks.
Absolutely. Greg Wyshynski there joining us. Yeah, I saw his tweet about Dolomite, and I was like, you guys have been begging me to watch that, and I watched it over the weekend. So funny.
I would suggest.
It's so funny.
If you like Eddie Murphy.
If you like laughing.
Yeah, if you like laughing at a funny bone in your body, watch it.
You also, not around the kids, though.
Yeah,
and
don't
I'm
watch
glad he mentioned, around the kids. I'm glad he mentioned Wesley Snipes' character because very underrated in that movie.
Dude, he is hilarious.
I'm
telling you guys, it took me like 30 minutes to figure out. I was like, oh, wait a second. Because he's aged a little bit. He's got some makeup on. I was like, wait. Oh, my God. That's. Holy cow. Like, it took me forever to figure that out. I guess I was just so focused on The Grift, right? I was so focused on Eddie Murphy. It's really, really good. The official title is My Name is Dolomite. Is that right? Something like that. It's on Netflix.
It's on Netflix.
It's really good.
And it's nominated for 2 Golden Globes for Eddie Murphy. Hey,
Greg, film minor at Maryland.
Kudos.
Said Academy Award nomination. It's big time.
That's pretty big. I think every time Greg comes on, we need to ask him a movie question now.
Okay.
Every time he comes on.
I love Greg. He does a great job. And I think it's really important, and we'll talk about this on the other side. It's really important, his commentary and the context around his column about Peter Laviolette. I think it's really important to understand what he was doing, why he was doing it, the comments from Billy Leano, all those things. Like, it's you have to understand the context, because I think he did get a little flack on Twitter, probably unjustly so. And then Peter Laviolette, I thought, was great to come out. And I have not said this yet, but I do think it was great that he came out with a statement very quickly addressing the issues. And so we'll explain a little bit more about that and dive a little bit deeper in when we come back right here on Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Oh, finally, Marquise plays something for me. I appreciate it. Morning Drive, welcome to the show.
Happy?
Oh, that's great. I love it.
All right, thank you.
I love it. Derek Mason, Braden Gall, at 1025 underscore MD.
Uh-huh.
Tell us why your significant other deserves to have a Moments Piece Salon and Day Spa $100 gift card. These are hard. Some of these are hard to read, guys. Mm. Like, there are so many amazing people doing amazing things. It is, especially significant others with children and health issues and... we don't want to like read every single one of these on the air, but man, there's a lot of people out there that deserve to be pampered. Let's just put it that way. And a lot of you loyal listeners, of course, sticking up for your significant others today. So we'll award that coming up in the final hour. Also, Chris Jungen's going to join us coming up in just a few minutes as well. Preds fans, don't miss tonight's Smashville Live featuring Nashville Predators CEO Sean Henry will be in Bellevue at Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House located at 8016 Highway 100. And the show starts at 7 p.m. Smashville Live is brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine.
How do you think it feels to be Garrett Cole right now of the Yankees?
I was going to talk about physical violence in the NHL,
but I just
want to ask about a rich guy.
But he gets a record deal. 9 year with no trade clause, 9 year, $324 million. Yeah,
to the Yankees.
Gosh, I played the wrong sport.
Yeah, you
Man.
Did. And you were born in the wrong time.
Exactly. Have you looked at something? What is it? $36 million per year.
Have you looked at Julio Jones's contract?
Gosh. Man, this is unbelievable.
Yeah, but you should have played. You should have played baseball. Guaranteed contract.
Yes, man.
No concussions.
Years,
no shoulder problems.
$1 million for a pitcher? Man.
Yeah, pitchers are worth a lot of money. So I will say this. I wanted to have Greg on for a lot of reasons. He gives us great perspective on the Predators and where they're at right now, Western Conference. He's a great hockey mind. But he's also been covering this whole thing that's been taking place in the NHL. And I think he does a great job explaining, and I think we talked about it maybe a little bit more in depth in the first hour, but he does a great job explaining that, you know, in the modern world of sports, in the locker rooms, in the office places, that there are certain things that are clearly just inappropriate, right? Mm-hmm. That there are clearly things that just cross lines. You can't scream racial slurs at people. You can't be physically punching players. Like, there's things that nobody debates. And then there's this other area that is totally gray, which is where most of life lives, where one player might think it's totally motivational and makes them a better player and a better man, I think is what he said. And then another player might view it as, you know, that
abuse.
That's not how I am motivated. It doesn't help me be better. It doesn't help me approach me differently. And I think it sort of is up to the individual player. And I think he caught a little bit of heat with his piece on Peter Laviolette, because his point, as he just stated, was not to lump Peter Laviolette in with all these other guys. There is no pattern of abuse with Peter Laviolette. Let's make sure we're clear on that. I also love that Lavi came out with a statement clearly, you know, saying, this is how I feel. This is the reality. I wish he would have left the accidental line out of the statement. I think that's sort of silly.
Yeah.
If he just leaves that out, I think the statement is perfect. But again, if the player, and this was part of why Greg Wyshynski wrote the piece, Ville Leino says in the piece, he's like, it just wasn't that big a deal. It didn't bother me. I wasn't affected negatively by it. It was the heat of the moment. It wasn't from a pattern of behavior. It was just a thing. And it's been on, and you said this in the first hour, Derek, it's been out there for almost a decade.
It's a meme.
You cannot be outraged about it today if you were not outraged about it 3 years ago, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, 6 years ago. And the player,
hell, last year, if you weren't outraged about it.
And the player himself is not outraged about it. So you cannot lump everybody in. You hear one story about one guy at one time, and you can't just lump them all into this abusive culture issue that is being handled in the NHL right now.
Yeah, you can't. And Grant, listen, you got to – I think these coaches, they understand, or they're starting to understand, that coaching styles have changed. You got to evolve. The player has changed. And the player today is going to be different from the player 10 years from now, 15 years from now.
Right.
Because we always say that, you know, this is the most offended generation ever, the generation that is growing up now. You know, they're offended. We feel they're offended by just about anything. If it's not what they agree with, then they're offended. Just think when those men or women, well, these young men and women or teenagers become adult and they get into the sporting world, how much more coaches are going to have to change. You think, you know, these kids, these young men are sort of sensitive now. Wait for another 10, 15 years and see how it's going to be. But these coaches, they have to realize and understand that your coaching methods 10, 15, 20 years ago, the way you used to coach then, you can't coach that way now. The things that you used to yell and scream, you can't yell and scream anymore. You know, you getting in a player's face, you can't do that anymore. You're pulling on a player's face mask. Yeah. Can't do that anymore.
And there's not a, and this is what I like about the point of Greg Wyshynski's article that involved Peter Laviolette, is that it is all gray area right now. There is no like definitive answer. Mm-hmm. Yes or no, black or white. This is right, this is wrong. There's just no way. Like, even
I think it's case by case.
Exactly. And even the way we are evolving as a society, and like you said, maybe you could, I know older people are going to say, oh, they're just soft. The young people are soft these days. Oh, everybody's too sensitive. Again, there's extremes that, in my opinion, are like the PC police going way too sensitive about everything. And I think that's wrong. I have been outspoken about how everyone, this PC nonsense is going to ruin everything. You can't go back and rewrite songs and movies and books and take out like every single thing that offends everybody, because that's just absurd. It's just ridiculous. But it's also important that we acknowledge that we've learned more about mental health and about motivation and about how people respond to things, and that it's good and bad, right? It's both good and bad that we are becoming a more evolved species and nicer to each other, while also maintaining in America our First Amendment rights to freedom of speech and comedy and, you know, the ability to be like, we can't have somebody hosting the Oscars who doesn't tell a single joke, right? Like, you can't do this kind of stuff. So it's fascinating to watch as it's evolving, and not everybody is going to be, should be lumped in. There's most of this stuff is going to fall in gray area where it depends on what the interaction between the two people. And if the two people don't care, and they are fine with each other, like you and I can talk to each other during the break, and not every two people would talk that way to each other.
Exactly.
And that's just because our relationship has a dynamic that doesn't necessarily hit everybody else normally. You know what I mean? Like, it's
you're absolutely
everybody's
right.
Everybody's different.
We had Jeff Fisher on some months ago, and, you know, we talked to him about what has changed with him, or what had changed at that point when he was coaching with him, in regards to how he, you know, approaches players. And he said, listen, it's become more of me being a psychologist or a psychiatrist, or
80-20, you know, right?
Yeah, it's more mental now. I have to do things a little bit different than what I used to.
Yeah, it was 20, I think he said it was 20%. You know, psychologist, 80% football coach, and now it's flipped.
Exactly.
80% psychologist, 20% football coach.
Absolutely, because these men and women are different now. You got to approach them different.
Yeah. And we're more aware.
Exactly. And so, you know, hockey coaches, they got to realize this too, that it's more mental than anything now.
And there are extremes, and those guys get fired.
Exactly.
And then there's everybody else in the middle.
Then you got to figure it out.
Right, which is where most people operate and live and work. Chris Jungens from the Nashville Predators. When we return, this is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. ESPN 102.5 The Game is bringing you the road to Dallas, Nashville's best coverage of the Winter Classic. Keep up with all you need to know about the Winter Classic as the Preds face the Stars in Dallas on New Year's Day. Special programming and live coverage from Dallas all month long. Hit up thegamenashville.com for full programming information. The Road to Dallas is brought to you by Fifth Third Bank, Firestone, and Sudden Servants convenience stores. And right now, joining us on the program, Chris Jungens, of course, EVP and with the Nashville Predators. Chris, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us. Before we get to the Winter Classic and a few other topics here locally, I would like to get your opinion because you've talked about this on the show before. You were drafted as a baseball player, so you came up through playing, you know, high level sports. You know, you're involved in a lot of different sports. Just sort of what you see as we evolve as a sports society with what the NHL is going through, what we've seen in other sports, especially on the youth level, just sort of your opinions and thoughts on what you're seeing and how the sport is changing.
Well, good morning, guys. You know, I'll only talk about it from my perspective because I've been involved with youth coaching at the baseball level for quite a while. And, you know, growing up as an athlete, I think, for me, it was a little different. You sort of respected a higher power of authority. You did what you were told. You got through it. You moved on. But now I think with young people, especially, you know, my son's age 14, 12 to 14, even older, I've got a lot of experience in that 12 to 14 range. But these kids just want to be loved. They want to be coached. And I think I heard somebody say in the other segment, it's flipped and it's more 80% of it is non-coaching type of attributes and 20% is the actual coaching. And, I would agree with that. I have a lot of fun doing it. I think bringing fun back into the game for me as a youth coach and not taking ourselves so seriously, especially at 14 years old when you're dealing with eighth and ninth graders, is a big deal. I think there are a lot of parents, a lot of coaches that put a lot of pressure on these kids. And, you know, for me, it's all about bringing the fun back in, teaching them kind of what they need to do to get to the level that they've communicated they want to be at, and just giving them the tools to get there.
And I know it's different everywhere, right? Like Canada with hockey is so serious. Football in Texas. I know baseball in Georgia at the Little League level. Just like you can see, like parents of 6-year-olds and 7-year-olds just going completely bonkers. And I think you're right that if it's just take it a little less seriously, right? Is that not what sort of all of these sports need a little bit at the youth level?
Well, it is, and it's also, you know, the specialization thing that we all talk about is a real thing too. And you know, as you begin to talk to college coaches, you know, guys like Tim Corbin and Monty Lee at Clemson, they will tell you that they go after the multi-sport guys. So kids are facing tremendous pressure because they want to get, you know, they want to be at the top of the class and they want to be on the PBR and the Perfect Game websites as the number one rated shortstop in their class in the state of Tennessee. But conversely, the guys that they want to have pick them up are telling them to play multiple sports and become better athletes. So, you know, it is a real struggle. The kids are getting confused, and that's where, you know, youth coaches can come in and again, put the fun back into the game, because we have to remember it truly is just a game, and it should be a lot of fun.
Now, obviously, the Winter Classic is coming up for you guys, and I know Pred fans are looking forward to it. What has it been like preparing for it? And also, what do you guys have in store for the fans that are going to make the trip?
Yeah, you know, Derek, it's been awesome. You know, when you get into your season, you know, everything's about the next game and the week and the opponent and ticket sales and sponsorships and driving premium and marketing and all those things. And so you really don't spend a lot of time sort of counting down the hours. But, you know, you sort of sit back today and, you know, we'll travel to Buffalo today. It's December the 12th. We'll be leaving on the 31st, taking the staff down to Dallas. We're going to have some carved out space in the Midway. I don't know if you guys have been to the Cotton Bowl, but it's like a state fair. It's where the state fair is. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of rides and cool things that you normally don't see around a football stadium that we'll be able to take advantage of. You know, the staff's excited. We sold you know, almost 20,000 seats to our fans, which is just absolutely amazing that that many folks are going to take the trek to Dallas and join us there. So we're really excited. Yeah, we'll have carved out space. We'll have a Smashville Stampede is what we're going to call it. You got to remember, this is not our home game, so we have to be a little mindful and respectful of the Dallas Stars. But we are going to march. We are going to do some cool things. We're going to try to bring the Smashville experience to Dallas. We'll be wearing a lot of gold, and hopefully we'll get a big win.
Are you going to have the fried peanut butter jelly sandwiches, the fried Twinkies, fried Oreos, fried butter? Are you planning on trying all of that? And what do you plan on doing to combat all the cholesterol?
The only thing that we want to fry right now is the Dallas Stars on New Year's Day, Braden. So we will have a good representation of our brand of hockey and the way we do things here in Smashville. We'll try to bring it to Dallas. We're going to create memories for our fans, for our staff, for our players, their families, and it should be a lot of fun. Again, we haven't had a whole lot of time to think about it, but we'll start counting down the days next week with a long road trip and sort of regroup and get things ready to go for the Winter Classic.
Chris Young is joining us here. I went to the Cotton Bowl. I went to the Red River Shootout, as I call it. I refuse to change the name. Oklahoma, Texas, and when I was 12 years old, I think I learned how to cuss at the Cotton Bowl. I'm not even kidding. When I was 12, I was asking my dad, what are they saying? And I've never heard that many fans yelling at each other. I'm not suggesting that it'll be that in the game for you guys, but it is a historic venue, and if anybody's got a chance to go to the venue, it is a spectacular place to watch a sporting event and eat some fried Twinkies.
And it's turning into a rivalry. I mean, we play them this weekend. 5:30 start, so a little different for us. But if you look at the weekend as a whole, it's sort of a Tennessee versus Texas weekend. We've got the Stars who we're chasing, who knocked us out of the playoffs this Saturday, and of course the Titans with the big game against Houston on Sunday. So hopefully our Tennessee faithful will show up in droves at both venues, and Tennessee will come out on top 2-0 at the end of the weekend.
Chris, I think that the term rivalry can be overused at times, but I think in the NHL, what makes it so unique, because the number of games you play in the postseason, that as long as you sort of add a postseason history to it, to a team, that it can create that rivalry. Colorado recently, St. Louis obviously recently with you guys. Dallas last year creates a rivalry, not the way you wanted it to end. But is it just about playing somebody in the postseason and having that 2-week long war with somebody that is the number one factor in sort of creating a rivalry?
I think that's a big factor, Braden. I also think that just the competitive balance that is in the National Hockey League also creates the rivalry. I mean, you're talking about, San Jose last night, you know, where we both were in the standings last night. We were a point behind them. They're not where they want to be. We're not exactly where we want to be right now. And so that game becomes sort of a little feisty at the end of the second period and the third period. Those types of things create rivalries, but a lot of it could also be situational, where you are, what happened in the last game, certainly the playoffs, but I'd also lean on competitive balance a little bit. I mean, everything's so tight, the games, every team's very good, and it just depends on the situation.
Chris Jungens, EVP and Chief Revenue Officer for the Nashville Predators, of course, the Winter Classic coming up, Dallas Stars coming into town this weekend, 5:30 puck drop, a little quick up to Buffalo and back on Thursday. Thank you so much for your time, man. Always good insight. Love talking to you.
All right, guys. Have a great day. Thanks.
Absolutely. Chris Jungens is there from the Nashville Predators, and 20,000 people going to Dallas for the Winter Classic is pretty cool. That's pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. And so special thanks to him there for that. And again, I think it does come down to play. You play somebody in the playoffs and they beat you in the NHL. That never leaves you ever as a fan in the NHL. I don't know if you got that as a football player, Derek. Obviously the Titans and the Ravens have a have a thing that's happened in the postseason a few times in Nissan Stadium, actually. But it's different in the NHL because you play so many games.
Yeah.
And I never viewed Colorado or St. Louis. The reason the Anaheim thing became a rivalry, A, the way they played hockey, but also you play in the playoffs for a brutal series and you win and you go to the cup, you play them the year before. You start playing a team more than once, you get to know the guys. They played Ryan Kessler when he played for Vancouver, and that was a great series. It's about the, I don't know, to me it's about the playoffs. Obviously Chicago was a natural rivalry. St. Louis and Dallas are division rivals. I get that.
Detroit was the rival.
Sure, and if some of that was the fact that so many
people from Detroit
moved down
here.
Yeah. Heck, you. You're one of them.
Exactly.
So, but I think once you lose to somebody in the postseason in a 6 or 7 game battle, that never leaves you as a hockey fan. Ever.
Yeah, it does. And rivalries can be quickly made in hockey or basketball for that matter because of playoffs,
right.
And you play so many games against one another, 7-game series in playoffs. So you can play a team, 14 times, 21 times in 3 years.
Yep. It's really, there's nothing like playoff hockey. Yeah. We say it all the time. All right, stick to sports. When we return, Derek Mason, Braden Gall. I want to tell you guys about Xfinity, though, before we go. And that's because it's the entire focus of your house. They take care of you from back door to front door, the entire place, man. I got the home security app on my phone. I got the home security system. I can just, my wife forgets to set the alarm or something. She walks out the house with the girls. I'm on the air. We're busy. I just can pop up my app here, the Xfinity Home app, and I can see if there's a door that's been unlocked or if there's I can check the cameras. You can see if the dog's where he needs to be. You can turn lights on and off if you've got smart home capabilities. But more importantly, you can set the security alarm. Like, she forgets all the time. I forget all the time. You just pop on the app, the Xfinity Home app. You push in your code, and boom, your alarm is set from anywhere. If you're on vacation and you're worried about your house, you can check, hey, did I forget the alarm? I can set timers for lights, all these really cool things with the Xfinity Home app. It's right there in the palm of your hand. You can control the security and safety of your home, and that gives you peace of mind. Again, you're on vacation, you're at work, you're on the air doing a show, and you forget to set the alarm. You just pop up the app, and you set the alarm, and everything is gravy in, like, literally seconds. Takes no time at all. It makes your life simple, easy, and awesome, and it gives you peace of mind and security. The Xfinity Home app, package it with your home television package and program, package it with your Wi-Fi. That's what I've got. I've got the security system, the Wi-Fi, and the TV. Now they got mobile as well. They've got everything for your home entertainment and security needs. Check them out, 1-800-XFINITY, Xfinity.com, or pop it to an Xfinity store today for more details. That's all we want here on Morning Drive. Just feel the heat with somebody.
With somebody who loves me.
Derek Mason, Braden Gall.
I just want to dance with somebody that loves me. That's all.
Is that too much to ask? No, man, that's what we're all looking for.
Absolutely.
That's all. Aaron Wilson joining us here, next segment from the Houston Chronicle. Going to be joining us here in a few minutes is what I meant to say. I was distracted by Whitney. So we'll go behind enemy lines in hour number three. Obviously, the Preds with a big win last night, 3-1 over the San Jose Sharks. Critical in the standings, picking up 2 points there. UC Saros great in the third period. But it's about 8:45, so that means it's time to stick to sports.
The world is a crazy place.
Crazy sounding pretty good right now.
Let's lighten the mood.
After all that seriousness, you're just going to crumple it up and throw it in the trash.
And stick to sports now on Morning Drive.
All right, Stick to Sports is brought to you by the good folks at Decorated Den Interior. Stick with the pros at Decorated Den when you're ready to decorate your home, office, or outdoor spaces. Single men, families that don't have the time because you're working so much, especially during this time of year, then go check out Bonnie at Decorated Den. She's the best. Make an appointment right now, complimentary appointment at decoratingden.com.
Number one.
All right, so question one. Now, I'm guilty of this in my younger days because, I was young and, didn't want to work.
Still are.
I am still young, but I'm talking about young Keys. I'm talking about 19, 20-year-old pushing buggies for a career, Mark Keys.
What is pushing buggies?
Carts.
Oh, grocery carts? You call them buggies?
Yeah, I call them buggies.
You are from Alabama.
Yeah, really.
Derek, what do you call a grocery cart?
It's not a buggy. A grocery car.
It is not a buggy.
Grocery basket.
It's a cart.
No, I don't know.
Yeah, whatever. That was my career back in the day. So, I don't know if you guys saw this, but Le'Veon Bell missed the Jets and Dolphins game because he had the flu. So Adam Gase basically told him, we don't want you around the team. We already had a guy with mono. We don't need you around here.
Yeah.
So they basically kicked him out of the facility. So instead of, resting up and, I got to, get better so I can get back on the field, Le'Veon Bell decided on that Saturday before the game to go bowling with his family. Now, mind you, it's family time, but you're sick. You got the flu.
Dude, if you've got a real flu, you can't go bowling.
Yeah, and he bowled a 251 if he asked him.
If you got a real flu, there's no way you can bowl a 251. Right? If you got the real flu, you're in bed, man.
You're not out. You're in bed. You're not going bowling. You're not doing anything. I'm laying in the bed. If I got
your
the
body
flu,
is miserable.
Temperature over 100.
Vomiting, nausea.
Yeah, I'm not. Ugh. I'm not out bowling. I'm not out doing anything
no
but
chance.
Resting.
So and what's funny is he does not regret this at all. He said that the only thing he really regrets is getting caught, that he actually was out in public. But I mean, if you got a game the next day, calling out for the flu. I mean, come on now.
Well, it sounds like he didn't call out for the flu. It sounds like the Jets
the
made
coach,
the decision.
Yeah, said nah, we don't want you to play.
But then rest
it's
up.
Not a, right,
then
it's rest not, a, it's
yeah,
not a good
but
look.
But it's like, listen here, family. You know, I gotta rest. I got the flu. I can't play in the game, so I'm a rest.
It's not a good look.
Yeah, it's not a good look.
And plus, man, you haven't even rushed for 200 yards. Damn near
but he's
this
still,
year.
But he's still the focal point of the offense.
Yeah,
like
he
he's
is.
Bad.
But has there been a time that you guys had to like, or you guys just wanted to do something that was fun, but you knew you had an obligation, so you had to get out of those obligations by like faking that you were sick? I did that once. Like when I was younger, like my first trip in Atlanta, I was working and I was working pushing buggies. And I called out, yeah, pushing buggies. That's what I call them. So I had to work that Friday and that Saturday. So I faked like I was sick so I can go with my friends to Atlanta for a whole weekend. And I was young. I was like 20, maybe 19.
I think everybody as a young kid, like before you're 12 or whatever, you've always like, oh, my tummy hurts, Mom. I don't want to go to school. Everybody's done that.
And then you're at home playing video games or something.
I don't think I've ever, like... I can't think of a specific time, but I'm almost positive that I would have called. I waited tables for like 8 years in college. I'm almost positive that I called in sick once for being hungover. There has to have been a time. Like I can't even remember a specific time. But is that? But I mean, technically, you're sick, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does that count? I mean, it's self-inflicted.
Well, I've embellished a sickness because I was hungover at a. Said job within the last 20 years.
You've only had two.
Yeah, and I said I was...
It was the Big Ten Network.
I said I was sick. I still went to work, but I said I had food poisoning, and it really wasn't food poisoning.
So you were going to the bathroom puking, and it was...
Yeah, it was because I had a hangover.
And you don't drink
it
very much.
Yeah. This is when... This is a while ago, like a long while ago.
So you're working with Willie or you're working with me?
Neither one. This is a long...
This is Big Ten Network.
I'm telling Saban.
This is before I even got into the radio
So
world.
This was football?
Yeah. I'm not going to say which team it was.
I'm telling Saban.
It could have been college.
That's
it could have been pro.
That's why Floyd didn't re-sign you.
But I still went to practice. But I said, I got food poisoning.
Were you over on the bench the whole time?
Practice has to be.
Huh? Were you over on the bench the whole time? Like, did you run reps or were you out?
No, I was out, period.
On a knee in the corner?
See, practice has to be hard. Yeah. Like, because you know, you guys watched that Dennis Rodman documentary, that 30 for 30? And he was like drinking every single night, but would show up to practice.
I don't understand
perfectly
how he did that.
Fine.
Yeah,
and
I don't get it.
I just don't get how you can possibly do that.
I don't. Well, I mean, like, look at rock stars, right? Like, rock stars burn it at both ends. Every day, and I don't know how they get up and do the 3 hour performance, you know, singing and playing music and acting. Settle down over there. I mean, I've watched Bohemian Rhapsody. Okay, I know.
No,
I get
it. I need to go see good folks at decorating. Yeah, I mean, cool Greens MD. Yeah. Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know what Bonnie's gonna do.
I don't know what Bonnie's gonna do about my code or anything.
I mean, listen. When Fitzy and I were doing this show. There was like the one time, and it's the only time I'll admit it publicly, but we showed up for work and we did the show. I think it was a Monday night, I want to say, or a Tuesday. I can't remember the night they clinched the Western Conference and they beat Anaheim. And we were at the game and we were like, if we win this game, we're going out on Broadway and then we're doing the show the next morning. So we went out on Broadway.
Y'all had a good
old
time.
And we celebrated. Like, I didn't leave the building until like 45 minutes after the final buzzer. We just sat in the concourse and like, watched everybody scream. It was louder. It was almost louder in the concourse than it was in the bowl itself. And so people were just losing their minds celebrating out on Broadway. The streets were blocked off and, you know, tens of thousands of people outside. I don't think I got home until like 3, and we were on the air at 6.
Wow.
But I've told that many times, so that's not new information.
No, it's not. Well, so. Was I good at producing on Friday?
Yeah, you were.
I was.
Yeah.
Okay. Just making sure.
But that was Christmas party induced. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. But was
that's
I good?
Company. You were at a, you were being a company man.
I was being a very
the night
company
before.
Man. Yeah. I was being a company man afterwards, too.
Yeah, okay. I'd stop talking right now.
Exactly.
Speaking of, okay, so you say that you worked and obviously you were hungover and you had to call out work. Well, if you worked at Chipotle, they're taking a different approach to managing sick employees because they're going to have a nurse on site.
Don't eat our food? Oh, never mind.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, they're going to have a nurse on site to validate whether or not you have a hungover or you're hungover or you're just really sick. So they're going to have a nurse basically validate if you're really truthful about if you're sick or not. So don't call out.
Workers in this country got nothing, man.
Man, you can't even call out sick no more.
I know, dude.
Game has changed, man.
Well, come on in. We have the nurse evaluate you say whether you're sick or not.
What's the point of that? Like, okay, you're lying to us about you being sick, so we're going to fire you? Like, come on.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's not.
That seems a little harsh.
I think that's a little bit, I think that's a bit too much.
Damn, workers' rights in this country disappeared.
It's a bit too much, Chipotle.
Yeah, man, just leave and push buggies. That's all I'll tell you.
Number three.
What the hell's a buggy?
All right, so see, when I get married one day, I'm probably going to have a very generic proposal because I'm a, generic person. I may do it smooth, like, hey, girl, you want to marry me?
Hey, girl.
You think
that's
how it's going to work?
Want to jump the broom?
You want to jump the broom?
As long as you're not planning more than, like, five words, you're fine. If you plan more than five words, you will screw it up.
Yeah. Just marry me, girl.
And I don't mean you. I mean everybody who screws it
just
up.
Just marry me, girl. Dang.
Exactly. So, like, you want to do this or what?
History?
You want to do this or what?
You want to tie that knot?
You want to tie that knot?
Do that double ring thing?
All right, so I'll never go as far as this man in New York City. He staged a faked armed robbery to propose to his girlfriend. Goodness. Now, basically, the robber, the convenience store that was pretending, to be robbed, and him was on this whole thing to where he basically, and his girlfriend is on the floor, like, begging for her life, and he gets down on one knee, he's like, will you marry me? So he faked an armed robbery.
I would say no.
In order to propose to his girlfriend.
Yeah, I would say
I'd be like, nah.
Nope.
Your decision-making skills are questionable.
Absolutely. No, I'm not marrying
I saw one that was a really grainy video from Russia, last year maybe. And it was like, the guys are like in combat gear and they're stopping cars. And they stop this couple in a car out in the middle of like the Siberian, wherever the hell, out in the middle of nowhere in Russia. And they had all these guys with like SWAT gear and like AKs and everything coming up to the car. And they pulled them both out of the car. And, like, they pulled a bag out and started pulling drugs out of the bag. And so, like, the woman and the guy look on video, it looks like it's about to be one of these, like, terrorist videos where, like, two people are about to get killed. And they've got guns and they're yelling at them and they're doing all this stuff. They pull all this powder out of the bag and they're like, what are you guys doing with all this stuff? And they're doing this whole thing. It's all in Russian. And then after, like, 30 seconds, the guy that was driving the car who was being arrested ends up, the police walk him over to the girl and they're, like, force him down on his knees. And then they walk away, and he pulls a ring out, and he proposes. And I'm going, like, in Russia, people actually die for this stuff, and you're faking this to propose? I know you guys live a little differently in Russia, but good Lord.
People are just, I mean, it.
I'd rather you put it on the Jumbotron of a sporting event.
And that's an epidemic, too.
How about the one where the guy faked the motorcycle crash?
Oh, my God.
And his soon-to-be, he hoped, fiance, he was on the ground, and I guess they had fake blood and all that stuff. And she runs over there, and she's frantic and going nuts and everything else. And then he gets up and proposes. Like, seriously?
Maybe we are basic, Marquise.
What if she would have had a heart attack?
I just asked her, hey, what do you think? You want to do this? You want to get married? And she was like, okay.
What if she had a heart attack?
Well, right.
How about the guy that proposed to his girlfriend underwater? No, underwater, and she was...
Yeah, he drowned.
He drowned, or they couldn't find the body.
What?
Something happened.
Yeah, he drowned.
Yeah.
There was a guy who was underwater, and this...
And she was in a... Wasn't she in something that she can see it?
Yeah.
Like a submarine or something? Yeah.
It was like a glass, like she was over, and she could see him underwater, and he was
like a glass boat or whatever?
I think he was putting notes on the window, and then all of a sudden, he didn't come back up.
Yeah.
And that's just like... Why do that? Look, let's just meet at Centennial Park.
I'm going to say,
just marry me, girl. That's
girl,
it.
Let's
just
do the double ring thing, baby.
At dinner, for a walk, you know, at her parents' house. Like, just be simple.
Yeah.
Private and simple.
Traditional,
and
man.
And don't plan anything more than like a sentence, because you will not get it out.
I can't get Rihanna, girl, but you was my second choice.
Yeah. Rihanna said no yesterday, American, so I'm coming to you.
American drowns after proposing to his girlfriend underwater.
Yes.
From Louisiana.
That's sad.
While vacationing in Tanzania.
That's sad.
Oh, my God.
Goodness.
That is really sad.
Oh,
man. And it took her to Centennial.
Yep.
Centennial Park.
Simple and just keep it simple and clean. And here's the other question we should add, just to end this conversation on a high note. We've had a long discussion about who's going to get married first, Chase or Stillman. Uh-huh. That's been long discussed on the show by me. Should we add Marquise to this conversation?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now we're good, dog.
I don't think Marquise is as close as Chase.
I got a Best Buy gift card. I don't need to spend it on nobody else but myself.
All right, we'll go behind enemy lines, talk to Aaron Wilson from the Houston Chronicle covering the Texans when we return.